Some people just know what they're put on this world to do. And for Kieran Kelly, he knew at a very young age that he wanted to make pizza. At the tender age of 17, he opened his pizzeria. And of course, as you imagined, he went through many ups and downs. One of those downs was just being completely over it and being this close to giving it all up and selling his pizzeria. Fortunately for him, he flew all the way from Belfast, Ireland to the Pizza Expo, where his pizza passion got reignited. From then on, he started reinvesting in his education, including signing up for pizza classes, which is how we met. We both trained under Massimo for about a day, and then I later found out Kieran flew over to Spain to get even more training from him. And so that's where we start the conversation. This is an amazing episode, so sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. And remember to always ask, what's good dough? Winnie is the number one pizza oven in the world and is my favorite pizza oven. They've totally revolutionized the game by giving the opportunity for home pizza makers and business owners to make great pizza anywhere. Their portable ovens can get up to 950 degrees and can make virtually any style of pizza. Check out the link in the show notes to learn more about Uni. And thank you for supporting my show sponsors. Walk me through your thinking, like why go to these classes? Why study Roman? And then why study Roman again, even deeper?
Yeah, so I think I've been in the business now since I was 17. So it's coming sort of 26 years. And about 3-4 years ago, I was contemplating, thinking, okay, when I get to 25 years, I had the 25-year mark in my head. When I get to 25 years, that's it. I'll sell up and, you know, right off into the sunset. And the pizza career is, you know, I've been there and I've done that. And I had went to I'd always wanted to go to the Pizza Expo, but I was always too busy. And I had said a couple of years before, it's potentially going to, you know, sell. I said, I'm definitely going to go just to, you know, send me out and just see what it's all about. That changed the pizza world in my life. Unbelievably. I went there with the idea of like, okay, I'm going to see these guys and, you know, we're going to have a good chat and we're going to enjoy things. We're going to learn. But that was it. But when I got speaking to the likes of John Arena, who was the main guy, in my opinion, and, you know, was learning with Tony Gimignani and Mike Bausch, I was just gone. I thought I had this long journey of being in the pizza game. But when I met these guys and seeing how inspirational they were, I was like, I'm only getting started. So when I came back home from the Pizza Expo, it was as if like there was a new rejuvenation of the whole love for the pizza business.
It had a rebirth.
Yeah, like a rebirth, you know. And, you know, it's really sort of lit the fire in my belly just to, you know, really sort of get more understanding about, you know, pizza as a whole, you know, and, you know, different styles and what makes people tick. And the mentality as well of how they operate within their business, you know, keeping their staff morale high and the longevity. Like John Arena is in his late 60s, I'm sure. And that guy has as much passion, as much drive as any 20, 30-year-old that I know. And it's amazing to see, I think it's every Monday, that his dad comes into the store and they still work away on a Monday and, you know, they help out. So I think it's that, you know, that never-ending sort of side of improvement. And then when I really thought about it, like, okay, well, what do I do if I actually sell the pizza business? I'm unemployable. And I know nothing else.
Is that the conclusion you came to? It was just like, I would just be rotting somewhere on a beach living?
Yes. Yeah. Without a doubt. It sounds good. And it sounds like, oh, I'll be a great, you know, if you didn't have it to, you know. But I kind of like go, it's my life. It's my passion. It's all I've ever done since I was 17. And, you know, when I had a real good think about it, like a real gut check, I was like, there's nothing else I want to be doing. You know, so with change the dynamics of the business to an extent. We are with three really good stores, top performing stores in Ireland, and we could grow it a lot, you know, with a lot more stores, but I'm very conscious about losing the quality of the brand and the culture and the integrity within the business. So it's going to be a slow burner. And if we get one store open per year, but rather than it just being another store. It'll be like a mega store. You know, I prefer to do much little great stores rather than just pop lots of stores up for the sake of popping them up.
That all makes sense to me. Like, you just really fell in love with the thing you and I both love so much. And I get that. I totally relate. Like, sometimes I'm on this high, sometimes I'm on this low, but you're right. Pizza Expo, things like that, or like an inspirational podcast will just like put me back on that high. I still want to know, like, what is it about Massimo that you were like, I have to go see him again and spend even more time with him? Because at the training that we were at, we had about like 7 hours with him, but we had about, you know, 6-7 hours with all of the instructors. Why him? What did he have that he could help you implement in your business, if any?
It was the fact that, you know, one, it's a bit closer to Ireland than going to America every time.
Sure. Yeah.
He was, I met him after the class and we were having a chat, and just a very endearing guy, very passionate, very relatable. And I got the impression when he was teaching us on the day, he was teaching us because it was his passion. You know, it wasn't just another workshop. You can tell it's clearly his passion. Same as Tony and same as Pasquale. It's, they love what they do. And then we sort of met up and we went over and we spent 3 days together, you know, from 9 a.m. to 4 o'clock. And he couldn't have been any more helpful. He's so passionate about getting the product right and following the rules for Roman pizza. And it, you know, and a lot of the other guys, I think, you know, they do different styles and they do different, you know, different methods, where he just seems to be devoted to the Roman style pizza. And he's got a real passion for it. And it was just a great fun time.
Yeah, I'm sure you can learn, you know, a lot from him. And I just wasn't sure if there was like a plan for you to introduce Roman style into your pizzerias or whatnot. And maybe there is later down the line, and maybe this is something you put in your back pocket. Maybe it's not immediate.
That's exactly it. What we have got now, I have all these crazy ideas that I'd love to bring into the store, but we've got a very good model that works. It works exceptionally well. And we've sort of built a bit of a brand, like a small brand. So for me to go in and sort of rub it all out and sort of rewrite the script, it would probably annoy a lot of our loyal regular customers, because sure, they're used to what we're doing. But there's part of me that still goes, we could do this and we could do that and we could introduce this. But it's, you know, a lot of our stores, well, all of our stores would be like high volume stores. So you could introduce a lot of these things on a Monday or Tuesday or Wednesday night, but come a Saturday night when the thing is rammed, we need a simple menu that, you know, people are, it's dependable, it's reliable, they know what they're going to get. It's an exceptionally high quality product. But where we sort of try to eclipse it is on the speed of service and the efficiency of our store, that we can get maximum amount of great quality pizzas out with exceptional service. And there's a lot of places that can get really good pizzas out, like really good pizzas, but maybe the service isn't so good. And then there's some places like the big chains, they can get them out very, very quick, but the quality is not there. We try to, you know, get the best of quality married with the best of service.
I like this whole conversation about not ruining the flow and making sure that, you know, you don't compromise the core product, because that's what you all are known for. And just to sort of continue to play around with this idea of like adding a Detroit or a Sicilian, something that's par baked, right? Would, in your perfect world, would that be under the same Pizza Guys brand, or would that be a ghost kitchen?
Yeah. It would be. No, okay. That would be on, yeah, the
potentially, if you were to add it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the ghost kitchens, there is a place for the ghost kitchens, but I still think the customer likes to see where the shop is, where, you know, the kitchen that it's coming from and all that, you know.
Yeah.
I think in much bigger cities, ghost kitchens can work quite well. I don't think we're at that capacity that I think people would be dubious about ghost kitchens in a smaller sort of city. And again, I don't know how ghost kitchens how well they'd work in smaller cities in America. Is it mainly the main cities that they would sort of operate in, or is it a mixed bag?
I can't speak for smaller cities because I live in a pretty big one, but I see it working here all the time. But even in a big city where there are a lot, I still, yeah, like you said it straight up, like, people feel a little like sketch about them. They're like, am I ordering pizza or am I ordering from a chain burger that's also making a pizza? And is it going to be any good? You know what I mean? So I think you bring up some valid points. And if you add, like, if you can execute well on a Sicilian or Detroit, why go the extra step of making a ghost kitchen when you can just add it onto a brand that's already doing so well? This podcast is brought to you by my favorite pizza cheese for Detroit style pizza. And I'm talking about Baccio cheese. It's perfect for that aesthetically pleasing high crown Frico edge. Brett Avizzi's Pizza Bus is also a Baccio user. He says he loves it for its quality, price, and the fact that they have a rewards program. Gold Club rewards members can receive cash back for every pound of cheese purchased. Get that cheese, pizza pal. Learn more at bacciocheese.com. While we're on the topic of delivery, if I recall correctly, you don't use third-party apps, right?
Never. Well, no, we use third-party apps. Sorry, no third-party drivers.
No third-party drivers, excuse me. I found it super interesting about how you sort of just rely on that in-house, because I find that it's becoming lesser and lesser used in the States.
Yeah. It's more like a lot of the stuff like Uber drivers, that sort of thing. Yeah. Yeah. Well, our big thing is service. You know, what separates us from a lot of the competition, it's the quality of our service. And like on our reviews, you will see thousands of 5-star reviews, and 90% of them is actually complimenting the driver. So what that tells me is the customer, you know, they're ordering online. They're very rarely even calling anybody. So they get their pizza delivered to their door. The only person that that customer has any interaction with is the driver. So not taken away from any of the third-party drivers, but you have no control of who's coming to your store and who's going to your customer's door. So we treat our drivers as if they're an extended member of our family, of our staff. You know, they're uniformed, they're well-presented, they're interviewed, you know, they've got tidy cars, they've got, you know, clean cars, they're well-presented.
You check their cars?
Yes. Yeah.
Do you have like an inspection list, or is it just like visual? Just
random checks. Yeah, just make sure they're clean, tidy cars.
Oh, random checks. It's not just one time.
No, roadworthy, you know, that they're, you know, they're...
I like that.
Because it's they're carrying our product. You know, they've got the sign, pizza guys, you know, the rooftops. They're going to people's doors. And, you know, it's a few... If you've seen a dirty taxi putting up to your door, you're going, you know.
If so it's dirty on the outside, it's likely dirty on the inside, right?
Exactly. So everything from start to finish, including their door, including their cars, it has to be presentable. You know, so we have our own fleet of pizza guys minis on the road, and they get religiously washed every day. If it doesn't matter if they're dirty or not, they get washed before they start their shift.
Is that so, in-house, or do you use like a separate company?
We just use one of the local garage. Gotcha. We bring them down, or sometimes they come up and collect them and bring them back for us.
Gotcha.
So, you know, if our car is dirty, we can't really say to the drivers, here, guys, clean your car. So they know that we get our cars cleaned every day. And it just keeps that fresh, professional image, you know, always at the forefront.
Yeah.
But more so, we know the driver, you know, we interview the driver like a member of staff. So we know, you know, we sort of give them a bit of training, and there's a manual on, you know, how to talk to the customer, you know, how to interact with the customer, you know, close the gate on the way out, you know, and we ask the driver to ask the customer, if you're happy with my service, you know, if you could kindly leave us a review. So the customers are like, wow, because it's different. It's because a lot of the other places are using the third party drivers, and not they're not good, they're just probably not trained well enough. And our drivers, we put them on a bonus scheme. So the more mentions that their name gets on our reviews, they basically go into a pot and they get a cash bonus at the end of the month. So dang, it's in their sort of interest, just to, you know, or we'd do like a random, like we'll give them a free Jan's night out, you know, for the ice hockey, for the most quirkiest review that they get. So if the drivers are going up and they're having a bit of fun and a bit of banter, we actually had a driver singing to the customer one time. And it sort of, you know, we got a bit of value out of that one. But it keeps that, you know, from the in-store staff to the drivers, they're not two separate parts of the business. Everything is one. And, you know, from the owner to the managers, the make line to the drivers, it's all the same ethos and it's all the same culture.
Are you able to share that manual with me? Because I would love to just read it and share it with people who are listening here.
Oh, yeah, sure. Of course, yeah. Yeah.
Hell yes.
I can actually, if you want, I can share our whole Pizza Guys manual, our
Let's
whole perspective.
Heck yeah.
You know, I can send you all that and you can sort of have a look at it and go, well, yeah, that's what I want. And anybody else in the pizza world that would love it, you know, there's no problem.
It'll be linked in the show notes. Y'all.
And that was the main thing that I learned in America.
Yeah.
That how open and willing the guys were willing to share stuff, you know, and I thought that was amazing. So, you know, if anybody can benefit from it, there's a wee bit of legwork that I've done in there. And if anybody can benefit from that, that's cool.
Yes, yes, yes. I love that. And just to quickly add on, like, the culture here for delivery drivers is so different. And I think it just, it's a nice, refreshing take on what you all do, because from what we were discussing back in Hollywood, is that your people, like, they're not dropping off food. They are meeting with the customer. It's an interaction. They are an extension of the brick and mortar. It's not just like drop it off and go, risk it getting stolen, whatever the case may be.
No, and like, we never leave food anywhere. Never.
Completely different.
I was amazed to see like so many packages of food just sitting in places, and I'm like, baffling. You know,
it's become the norm.
Drivers are not allowed to physically leave food. Even if the customer says, I'll be there in 5 minutes, our driver will wait, keep the food in the heat box until that customer comes there and then hands it to him. And that's if we'll have to remake it, we'll bring it back to the store, remake the customer a fresh one and send it out. But we don't ever leave the food anywhere.
That's amazing. Does that not add, I mean, I don't know, how do you sort of look at that just financial picture? Like, it costs money to hire a driver. It costs time for them to wait. I don't know. Is that all just factored in the pizza, or are you banking on the fact that it's going to bring returning customers?
Yeah. So I think if we were on the likes of Uber, they would charge us like 35% if we wanted to use their drivers. But if we want to use our own drivers, we've got a pretty good rate because we've got decent stores doing good numbers. They charge us 11%. So we just have to make sure that, you know, it's within that parameter of between 11 and 35%. So we pay the customer like a retainer, but then the customer makes up the driver's main wage. You know, they get like £4 per every delivery that they do, which is like maybe $8, $7, $8. And you know, our big thing is like our drivers aren't same with the Uber drivers, and not just any Uber, any other third party driver. They could go out in 3, 4, 5 deliveries. You don't know how many deliveries this Uber guy has got.
Yeah,
because he could be working for Uber, he could be working for DoorDash, and he could be working for somebody else, and he could just be going about collecting all these orders. This is where it happens over here, that they can actually collect multiple orders. And even though, especially pizza, it does not travel. You know, we have a rule. The driver is not allowed to go out with any more than 2 deliveries. Our computer system says no if our dispatch tries to give him a third delivery. So it's 2 deliveries, absolutely max. So we try to get the pizza to the customer's door within 10 to 15 minutes, like 10 minutes being, you know, borderline maximum, but 15 minutes if it's a far away one and if there's traffic. And again, it's just, you know, you're not delivering food in a foil container where it's retaining the heat, and the quality's fine. As soon as a pizza comes out of the oven, it's nosediving rapidly. So the quicker we can get it to that customer's door, the better.
Before we continue on with the episode, I want to give a special shout out to Cordo Olive Oil. Truly, 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 the difference between commodity olive oil and quality olive oil is night and day, and that's why the best pizza makers like John Arena, Chris Decker, and Laura Meyer use Cordo olive oil at their restaurant. DM me at What's Good Dough or email me idriff@whatsgooddough.com, and I will set you up with a free tasting if you are an operator. And I'm talking about brick and mortar, caterer, pop-up, anything like that. I'll connect you and get you a free tasting. Thank you for supporting my show sponsors. You seem to be so good with systems and processes and sort of just like, I don't know, optimizing your product. And I have a feeling that has something to do with the fact that you've been in business for 26 years. And so sort of take me back to 17, years old, Kieran, starting that? Or maybe you can even take me back to, is it 11 years old when you sort of wanted this pizzeria? What was it about pizzerias that made you go, wow, that's what I want to do? And also curious to know, how are you so decisive at such a young age?
Yeah, so my mom and dad, they had a fish and chip shop. So we were sort of always used to, you know, the fast food game from a very young age. Whenever we were like 11 or 12, we would have been, before we went to school, our morning routine was go to the fish and chip shop, peel the potatoes, do the prep, and then wow. We went into school. Hard work was ingrained in our DNA from a very young age.
And how long did that last, just out of curiosity? Like early on?
Oh yeah, like from I could lift a bag of spuds, which was about 11 or 12, to maybe 15, 16. Wow. And then I was like, I don't want to be lifting bags of spuds no more. But where my love for pizza came was my late brother who passed away, Peter. He would have been 18 and I was 11, but he got a brand new car, and most 18-year-olds would be spinning about with their own mates. But my brother, who's that cool of a dude, he had brought me sort of everywhere that he went, which I loved. And every Friday night, we went into our local pizza shop called Legends. And I can remember at 11 years of age, he would have phoned it up. I would have went in, and the hustle and the bustle of this restaurant and the smell of the food and the atmosphere, it gave me goosebumps when I walked into this place every Friday night. And I can just remember seeing the guys, you know, tossing the dough, shouting, screaming. It was a full-on theater. And I went, I love that. That's what I'm going to do. And I think it brings back as well, you know, me and the brother, it was a good time that we had. It was memories that we had. And, you know, you're going home and you're sort of eating the pizza on your lap. And them sort of memories ingrained into my head. So from 11, it always says, I want to have a pizza shop. So I had a bit of an idea with fast food and, you know, how to treat customers and, you know, do things at an exceptional level. But it was in a different field. It was, you know, fish and chips and burgers, that type of thing. But I wanted to do pizzas. And then when I was 17, I had bought an oven, put it into my mom's garage. And I got a few of the PMQ magazines of Tom Letterman and, you know, learning how to make dough and, you know, stuff like that. So it was pretty much self-taught from that. And selling pizzas to a few of the neighbors, you know, it was getting better and progressing. And my mom hit me with, you either find the shop, you're going to have to move out, son, in the most loving way. So I found the shop, and a guy who worked in a really busy pizza shop called Darren Markey, he says, look, I'm looking at a job. And I says, look, I'll give you, at 17, I just had, you know, maybe it was a bit ballsy. I sort of said, look, whatever you're getting, I'll give you £30 a night more if you come and work for me. So he was like, yeah, he was like, happy days. And that was a lot of money back 26 years ago. But I was like, I need to get somebody because I don't really have a clue. But this guy, in turn, it works out that John Arena taught this guy, I think it was Jim O'Neill or Jim Kelly, who taught this guy, Darren Markey, who taught me. 40 odd years ago, John Arena did a student or an employee exchange with a guy from Belfast in Capers. And I only found this out like 3 years ago. And the guy that came across here trained Darren, who trained me. And I was like, wow, that was mind blowing.
What?
Yeah, that was crazy. That was crazy. So he, you know, he was super good. He worked in a very busy shop. So as we had opened up this shop, I was taking the orders and sort of helping him out, but he was training me as I was learning and growing in the business. But because he came from, he had a really good reputation, and it was like a barber shop. I sort of looked at it like he was like a barber. You know, people followed him to my store, not because it was my store. It was because they wanted a pizza of Darren Markey. So, you know, he brought his own sort of fan base of customers, and we just kept rolling and rolling from there. And, you know, we're still very good friends. He's now a driving instructor. But when the whole COVID thing came, I've always said to him, this door is always open to you. And just bring your apron and bounce on the line any night you want. And he came and worked for me for about 2 years over COVID. And it was great to have him actually back in the store. But it was also great that he left because he was so old school. And all the bad habits, all the messiness, all the stuff that, you know, the tweaks that you try to iron out of the really good guys, but they've got their little quirks. You know, he was still quirky. And but it was great fun. Great fun.
Wow. What a story. And so at 17, you sort of just were like, I'm going to put my feet to the fire, learn as I go. At 17 years old, you're not scared of the world, right?
No.
Would you give the same advice to your 17-year-old daughter when she gets there? Just like
100%. I want my daughter, whatever her passion is, just to run with it. You know, she loves the pizza. She loves our pizza business, but I don't think she's got that real passion to be in my business. And there's not a chance that I would be encouraging her to come into the business if it's not her passion. She has to find her own passion. My girls, they have to find their own passion, because we were sort of led down the road that we had to go to the fish and chip shop, and that was our next, you know, that was just what we had to do to keep it going. But I didn't want to, you know, it wasn't my love. And it's the same for my daughters. If they tell me, Daddy, I love this business and they want to come into it, that's great. If they don't, I'd much prefer they do something they're very, very passionate about, you know. And like when I was 17, we were coming out of a worn, torn country, pretty much. You know, every other month there was bombs and, you know, shootings and, you know, people getting murdered.
What was going on?
It was like there was the war between basically the Irish Republican Army and the British, you know, the soldiers and stuff like that, that, you know, the British obviously occupying part of Northern Ireland, and the Irish Republicans, they wanted the British out of Ireland. So there was all that conflict. And, you know, so it was like between the 70s, 80s and 90s, there was a lot of trouble. So that's when I sort of had grew up, but you're sort of oblivious to it. And maybe you're kind of with the blinkers on, you don't really think it's as bad as what it was, but it was pretty bad. So we were the first company, pizza company, to first food company in Belfast when I was 17 to start doing cross community deliveries. Like, you know, it used to be if you were in a certain area, be it nationalist or Protestant, you did not go to any other area.
Wow.
But I was the first shop to start, you know, going into different areas. But it came up with a lot of resistance. Like, some of our drivers got their cars set on fire. Some of our drivers got shot. So it was pretty, pretty brutal. But as the time went on, peace talks were implemented, and, you know, it just sort of, it fixed itself over a period of time. And now, you know, it's a very, very safe city to live in. You know, it's very, very safe and very little conflict, except, you know, the issue that happened with my shop the other week. But that was a very once-off, random act of madness, you know. And I sort of feel like, you know, you're saying about that's the way it used to be and everything's fine now, but it generally is, you know. It was it's a pretty cool place to live.
For anyone wondering, one of the pizza guy's shop was set on fire by some druggies, but that is not, you know, that's nothing new when you live in like California. So, you know, it's a cost of doing business maybe, but I'm sorry again for your loss there. But you know,
one of those things, but you know, it's like, with the other two stores there, so we're able to get the staff all sort of sent across, and we didn't lose any staff, and we'll get a nice new shop out of it, hopefully, with the insurance company. And we'll build it back that bit bigger and better.
That's awesome to hear. 17 years old, Kieran is, you know, living through this like unknown, right? Starting his own restaurant. You know, there's a lot of movement going around in the neighborhoods around him and the world unraveling. And I'm sort of, you know, aside from what you were talking about like the war and everything, like, what was the biggest challenge starting a pizzeria that young?
That young was getting, because a lot of my workforce were, every one of them were older than me. They were in their 30s, 40s. You know, and I was this young kid, naive, 17, trying to sort of get structure and, you know, systems into place, you know, to keep a business going and to keep it moving forward. And that was probably my biggest challenge, was getting, you know, at 17, getting older people to respect you. But I think it taught me a lot of good lessons that you just got to be humble. You got to be a hard grafter. And I think you earn your respect at a young age, being a grafter, being a worker, and, you know, not being a finger pointer. You know, if you need something done, you're willing to roll the sleeves up and get something done. And that sort of stayed with me right now. You know, if something needed cleaned or tidied, you know, we've got guys here that can do that, but I've no problems whatsoever going in, get my hand dirty and getting things sorted out. And I would say I've probably winged it for about 22, 23 years. It's only really been the last 4 or 5 years that we've had, when the second store and the third store came on the scene, that I've really went, oh, we need systems. It's okay with one store. And if I'm there, you know, the whole, like, you know, systems and procedures, they're important, but if you're there managing it all, it's not that important. But if you've got multiple stores, you know, you need things sort of, you know, categorized and systemized, and other people. That was the biggest thing that I probably found, was letting go of control, letting a manager to look after my baby, you know, letting somebody else look after my business, letting someone after look after my staff. That was the biggest challenge, you know, when I got the not running my own store, was letting somebody else run the store for me. But it gets you then to work sort of more on the business. And I did a great course there. I'm still doing it actually with Mike Bausch. And if anybody's sort of thinking, okay, especially multi-store operators, the guy is an absolute genius. You know, his course is unbelievable. He is so good at what he does, so knowledgeable, and he presents it in a way that it's like, oh, that's pretty cool. You know, so it's probably getting into the mindset now of working on the business and having that sort of way of thinking that you're always just wanting to improve and keeping the teams motivated and the morale high to keep moving the business forward.
It sort of surprises me that you were sort of just winging it for 20 years. And now you're like the systems guy. I can see just on your Instagram and the way you talk about your business that you seem to have a, you know, well-oiled machine. Was it easy to sort of take that on? Were you working with systems on one store and then it just, you sort of had to, like, I don't know, systematize it like as a whole business? Or, you know, was it an easy shift to do that?
It wasn't one store. I think it was when we got the three stores. It was like, I was trying to juggle all these different plates, and I knew it would have all came crashing down if I didn't actually learn to delegate and say, so now we have like a store manager in each store. I meet up with them guys, you know, share my vision and the culture with these guys. They then take it on board. They then pass it on to the staff that they're working with. So we still work very closely together, but you got to find the right people that are passionate about your business and that you can work well with. And their attitude, I would always say, is much more important than their actual aptitude. We've got guys that are really, really good. We've had guys that are really, really good, and I've put them into the management position, but they were the wrong attitude. I'd prefer to get guys that are fun, friendly, you know, they still, you know, they know how to get things done, but they can get people that can work for them and they have respect. So we usually find that people who are in a competitive sport are usually the type of people that can run a store. You know, if they're a captain of a football team, or they're a competitive athlete. I always find that these guys they're just naturally good leaders, I find. And they also, you know, they're pretty quick also. And they don't like to lose. They hate losing. They always like to be the quickest, the fastest, and, you know, the best at what they can be. So it's having that sort of competitive edge mentality within the business also. And it's also great to have it between the store managers that, guys, you are doing good, but that store actually kicked your ass this week. You know, come on, guys, raise the game. And you create that bit of inner competition between the stores as well, but all healthy fun.
I've heard that similar advice from Tony Gimignani, I think.
All right, okay, cool.
And he talks about like finding people who work well on teams. And I even think he asks people if they've played sports. And that's
in our questionnaire. Yeah.
Yeah. I myself played sports as a kid up until like middle school, and then I really stopped. So I don't know if I still have it in me. I feel like I'm a team player, but I'm wondering, did you play sports, and does that translate into being an owner?
Yeah, sports was a massive part of my life. Like when I was a kid, I played soccer from I was like 8, 9 to 17, 18. And then
So you had to work at the pizzeria and then just live that.
Yeah, that was it. But then about 5 years into the pizza business, I was competing in MMA, and I was actually a pro MMA fighter for 3 years. I had a few pro fights, a lot of amateur fights. And, you know, Conor McGregor, he just chained down the road from us. So it was on the rise whenever I was competing. So I think having that competitive mindset, you know, I think it's a massive, massive thing, especially if you're in business. If you're competitive in sport, you'll be competitive in business, and you just don't like losing. You know, even my daughters, I've got two daughters, they still haven't ever beat me in a race. My 11-year-old, I think she's getting pretty close. And the wife always says, would you not just let them win once? And I'm going, no, no. Because there's going to be a lot of times where they'll naturally kick my ass. But until I can keep kicking their ass, I'll keep trying.
Words of advice. I like that. I'm gonna make sure to remember that one. In terms of, you know, having a pizzeria for this long, what's worked for you? Because 26 years is nothing to bat an eye at. Congratulations on that.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's 26 years of being open 7 days a week, every week of the year. The only day that we close is Christmas Day for the last 26 years.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And so I think it's now just a way of life. You know, we are just accustomed to it, and I enjoy it. At the very start, after about 4 or 5 years, I was doing 7 nights a week for maybe 4 or 5 years. When I was 17 to about 21, I worked 7 nights a week, you know, and it was not healthy because I got into the stage where, you know, I missed out and, you know, 18, going out for a drink and stuff like that. But then what happened was we started having a few drinks after work. And then a few drinks, then another few drinks. And then, you know, it was just a bit of an unhealthy cycle because you were trying to cram the work life in, but then you're also trying to cram a social life in on the same night. And, something had to give. So I stopped drinking maybe 16, 17 years ago completely. And I've realized, you know, you need to have that balance. You know, you got to, work hard, but get to that stage where, you know, you don't start resenting it. Because I think if you start resenting it, you know, you're done. But if you can take a step back from the business and just watch your business grow and, you know, still have the input, I think the longevity side of things will be much better. If you're not in it 7 days a week, 7 nights a week, you know, I think at one stage you'll just go, I've had enough. And I was probably close to being that stage maybe 2-3 years ago. But then when I got speaking to a few very wise guys, I got a great bit of, you know, wisdom from like John Arena and Mike Bowes. Like, you know, you don't have to be a slave to the pizza oven, you know, to enjoy your business. And I think a big part of it is, you know, you got to let go and you got to let. And I think if we think that we're the most important person in the business, you're not giving the other team members that chance to sort of rise and shine. You're sort of trying to steal the limelight, where if you step back, you will actually see guys that you never thought, you know, could really step up to the mark. And that's been the biggest sort of pleasant surprise that I've seen is when I have stepped back, the guys that you maybe weren't so sure about really coming into their own and, you know, becoming great leaders because I've let them and, you know, take a bit of control.
That's amazing. That's very inspiring. And I love everything that you said about just really just appreciating the business that you're in and finding ways to continue to do that, because I'm sure there are days where you're just like, fuck, I'm doing this again. Yeah. Right. Yeah, I mean, completely. I feel like, not every day can be perfect, and there are going to be days that are hard. And so just one of the secrets is fucking find the things to love about your business and remember that when it's hard. Right.
Yeah. One of the biggest things that I've probably did that really, like, so obviously our place, you know, there's maybe 400 grand's worth of damage done to it, you know, and will be closed probably for 3 months in that one location to get it rebuilt. And obviously that day that it happened, you're kind of going, flip, you know, as you say, maybe this is it, you know. But very quickly, see when you see like thousands of messages coming onto your Facebook page and private messages, bouquets of flowers getting delivered to your business, you know,
amazing.
School teachers coming down with their kids and, you know, passing their, you know, their sympathies with the store. You realize very quickly, if you're part of that community, if you're really passionate about your business with the community, you see the support that you get back, it humbles you. You kind of like go, it's not just a pizza shop. You know, it's a part of the community. It's part of the DNA within the community and the people that it employs. And we do a thing with the special needs schools where we give them like free pizza workshops. Either they'll come to our place, we'll, you know, do the, you know, a full dough demonstration, they get to make their own wee pizza, or we bring pizza guys to their school and do that as well. And that's probably the highlight of my week. Because you're sort of given the chance to get kids that probably not have the chance to make pizzas and stuff like that, and just seeing the sheer delight on their face. It is unbelievable. So I would think when you get to that stage where if you just keep working and grinding, find something else within a business that is bigger than the business, that there's actually a purpose that you can go and, you know, just give something that you with no expectation for nothing back in return and just enjoy it, you know, and just seeing these kids smile, you know, it's pretty awesome. Like that was one of the little cards, you know, and you always get they'll always come up and they'll make something special for you. And like things like that are pretty cool. That's the sort of thing that goes, you know, them shitty days that you're talking about, fuck, is it worth it? You kind of look at somebody, yeah, we'll hang in for another year.
I love that. Thank you so much for sharing that. And hey, I don't want to take you away from your kids too much, but do you have just a couple more minutes?
Of course, man. I've all the time in the world.
Thank you. Okay. What is next then for Pizza Guys Belfast?
Yeah, so we're at that stage now where how we've got a really good brand and we've got a lot of outside investors that want to come in and buy into it and stuff like that. But I'm the owner, I'm the sole owner of the brand, and I don't want to take somebody else in irrelevant to what they're paying at the moment and possibly wreck or dilute the brand and the quality that we've sort of put out there. So it's not, I'm enjoying the process and we want to keep building it, but we want to do it. We're trying to, rather than selling franchises to outsiders, we want to try to give the guys that are working for us, like our store manager, he should be the next guy opening up another Pizza Guys. It's incentivizing him to open up another store, but it also lets the other staff know that, you know, it's not just a dead end pizza job. This can go wherever you want it. You know, we've got a KP. He's 16 years of age. He's been working with us for 6 months and he's told me that he wants to open up a Pizza Guys. And it gave me goosebumps because I can remember I'd opened up a shop when I was a year older than him, but I'm looking at this kid going, there's no way. But then I'm kind of like going, I was sort of the similar age. So if this kid can learn the systems and in 5 years' time, he's a perfect candidate, you know? And like, so it's trying to grow it from within our own company. So rather than just pop up shops everywhere for the sake of popping up shops, I think you could do that. It'd be easy just to grab the money, but you're buying headaches because you're going to be given your brand to somebody who's maybe not endearing it and maybe not passionate about it. And you'll just be fighting fires, you know, and you'll just be arguing. You'll be, you know, have you ever watched the film The Founder?
No, I have not.
Oh,
what's
man.
It about?
So it's a story about McDonald's.
Yes.
Right. Have you seen it?
I want to say you told me to watch it. And
yeah. So I watched it right now. For 6 months straight, every night of the week, right? Every night I watched it for 6 months. And it was one of the best films. So if anybody's going into any type of business, watch that movie. So this guy, Ray Kroc, obviously, you know, he was that guy that then taken it off the original owners. But at the start, he was just giving the franchises out to anybody in a heartbeat. But it nearly put his head away because they were all doing things different and it was wrecking things. So he realized very soon that it's the select, you know, to grow the brand properly, you need the right people, you know, and it's not just people with money with no passion. You need people with a passion because you can always find the money. If you're passionate about a model of a business, you know, it's much easier for us to try to find them finance rather than trying to find that person.
Wow. That was beautifully said. Yeah, you can, if the product is good enough and the demand's there, like people are willing to throw money at a thing that works.
Yeah.
But sometimes the people who are throwing that money can tank your business is what I'm hearing.
And yeah,
it's best not to take that money.
Yeah. Learn to say no. My biggest thing is because the wife would sort of shrug. She goes, but why aren't you? But why? I'm going, because they're not, you just, they're not the, you know, it has to be the right fit, you know, and it's maybe a slower process, but to me, I think it's more, you give more, what's the word? Like you give more hope for the staff that are working with you. I think, you know, they're not just in it. Like we've got a super high staff retention rate. When staff come with us, they don't leave. Like just do not leave. Like the last time we had someone leave was maybe, like a full-timer was maybe 2-3 years ago. You know, they seem to like it. We don't ask them to work to 3 o'clock in the morning like the big chains do. We have a sweet spot between we open at 4 and we close at 12. That's it. No, like 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the mornings. Huh. And, we just want to give the staff the opportunity. You know, if they want to be the next pizza guy, well, you know, let us know. We can definitely try to make that happen for them.
That's great. Before I ask you my last question, I just want you to spit some game on folks as to your plan when you open up these new restaurants and how you sort of, because you were sort of talking about it earlier, the smaller footprint, but talk about sort of the flow of everything.
Yeah. So the design of our store, it came about, on that film, The Founder, which I thought was fascinating, when any of the stores are getting built, it gets completely cleared out. And then the first store, we chalked everything out on the floor. And then we got people in to sort of mimic where the bodies would be in each station. And we sort of played about with that so many times where there was just chalk on the floor. And then when we found the right flow, so every station in our shop can't be more than 2 steps. So if it's from answering the phone to the slap station, it's 2 steps. If it's from the slap station to the make line, 2 steps. Make line to the oven, 2 steps. And from the dispatch to the door, it's 2 steps. So like I just call it the 2-step system. There shouldn't be any more than 2 steps from where you are to the next station. And everything sort of works in like a diamond. You know, so if an order comes in on point A, goes to the make line, goes to the fryer station, comes back out to the dispatch, and then it goes out the door. So there's a perfect flow within the business, and there's nobody walking the opposite direction. That's a no-no. Everybody has to walk in the same sort of way. Then the big thing for us is cross-training staff. So if we get a guy that says, I just want to make pizzas, we go, I love your passion, but in here we're a team and we do every station. So on the quieter nights, we will have like a timer. Every 1 hour, the timer will go off and everybody moves 1 station to the right. So it gives everybody a chance to work on different stations in the shop throughout the night. Yeah. So
is that just to keep the skills sharp? Like, yeah. And that's sort of, you know, forcing the fact that everyone is multi-trained or,
It keeps it fun. On the quieter nights, you can do it. Now, the thing is, it's like I use the analogy, you know, if you're a football team and you're not playing the best football team, you can put on your subs and you can put people in different positions to see how they react. But on your big games, in our case, on your Saturday nights, you use your best players in their best position. There's none of this swapping about, you know. When it's game time, you know, but when we're playing friendlies, like on a Tuesday night or a Wednesday night, things are a bit quiet. We can play about with things, and it keeps things, you know, the guy who's on the bench, he's there on a Saturday night, and Dave goes, Kieran, I don't want to do the bench tonight. You go, Dave, you're my man. I need you on this bench tonight. And he goes, okay. But it means on a Tuesday night, he might be doing something different, you know? So it just keeps them in, you know, keeps it a wee bit more exciting. And then it means if someone phones in sick or someone doesn't come in, there's none of this, oh, I can't do the phones or I can't do the bench. They can do it to some degree, you know, and what you usually find is they're actually a lot better than doing some of the things that they give themselves credit for. So it's just trying to get as many of them as multi-skilled and as cross-trained as possible. And it means then as well, if we have other stores and one of the other store guys say, here, we're short a guy on dispatch, we might not have the strongest guy in dispatch, but we've got a guy that can do dispatch. And, you know, we can help out the other stores also.
Dude, Kieran, I'm going to have you on the show again. You are just
anytime,
spitting
bro.
All this game, man. Thank you so, so much. That was amazing, an amazing way to end the conversation. But there is traditionally one way I end the show. And again, thank you so, so much for being on. Final question for you, brother. There's no right or wrong answer. What's good dough?
What's good dough?
Yes, sir.
What's good dough? That's a good question. In what context?
No right or wrong answer.
What's good dough? I would say our dough's pretty good dough.
I love it. I love
Is that
it.
All right?
That's all right with me, man. Thank you very much, cool, Kieran, for being on the show. This was fun. Thank you so, so much.
Thank you very much, man. God bless.
Well, there you have it. My conversation with Kieran Kelly of Pizza Guys Belfast. Kieran, you are an amazing human being, my friend. Thank you for showing me your views on pizza, business, and life. I learned so, so much from you, and I can't wait to have you back on. See you in a few weeks at Expo, buddy. To you, the listener, if you appreciated this conversation, which I'm sure you did, please reach out to Kieran. His information will be in the show notes at Pizza Guys Belfast. Let him know what's good dough. I appreciate you for listening. I love you. Till next time. Peace.